On today's episode of Coding 101, we are welcoming back one of our favorite code warriors, and we're revisiting an old coding language favorite as well.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Coding 101 is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,700 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/C101. That's lynda.com/C101. And by Hover.com. Hover is the best way to buy and manage domain names. It's simple, honest, and easy to use. For 10% off your first purchase, go to Hover.com and enter promo code C1018. Welcome to Coding 101. It's the TWiT Show, where we let you into the wonderful world of the code monkey. I'm Father Robert Ballister.
And I'm Shannon Morse. And welcome to this episode of Coding 101, where for the next 30 minutes, we're going to get you all coded up on everything you need to know to be an awesome code warrior.
That was very Game of Thrones-y. I mean, you were getting all kind of
Welcome. Jamish.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. And now we're doing something a little different for this, module. This
I'm
is
scared.
A little strange. We prepared for lots of questions, but in the groups and in the emails, people were saying, you know, 101 is cool. I like this whole beginner thing, but it would be nice if every once in a while we could throw in something a bit more advanced. Because when we're stuck with the 101 level, we basically have to go over the same concepts over and over in every language.
Because each language is very similar. It's just how it's put together is a little bit different.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with repetition. There's nothing wrong about learning about variables over and over and over because they're important, or loops over and over and over because they're very important. But we thought, why not have a module or two every year where we kind of take a step back, use a language we've already covered, and give you Coding 102.
Oh, boy. I hope you're prepared for me to ask you tons of questions, because myself, I feel like I'm still a beginner, so I might get a little confused along the way.
That's all fine. No, we're absolutely ready for questions. Now, the first thing we have to do is we have to tell people we're going to be using C#, which was the very first language we covered here on Coding 101. Now, you may remember when we covered C#, it was all about those basics, because it was the first module, the first set of episodes for Coding 101. And we never really got past making functions or methods.
Right.
Right. And that was good, but we figured we could do better.
Okay. I'm ready.
All right. Now,
but first, I think we should review how to reinstall Visual Studio, just in case people haven't done that yet.
Yes. This is something that we didn't do the first time around. We didn't give people a decent step-by-step tutorial on where they get Visual Studio, which is free, by the way, so they don't have to pay for it, and how they get it on their computer. If we could just put that at rest so that people know that, it's really easy to download, it's really easy to put on whatever computer you're using, then at least we give them that head start.
All right. Are you guys ready? So first off, you need to download the specific version of Visual Studio for your computer. So if you run over to my machine right here, I've went to the visualstudio.com website. We'll have this link in our show notes again, but if you don't know where this is, it's also found in episode 2 from our show notes as well. So you go to the Express 2013 for Windows Desktop Visual Studio download link. You click right there, and this is available for Windows Server, Windows 7, and Windows 8. When this pops up, you just simply make sure that your system requirements are correct, and you go to Install Now. So you click right there, and it'll reopen up a new page for you, and you click on this one. You want the Express 2013 for Windows Desktop version. You basically just run through the on-screen instructions. It'll ask you to log in with whatever your Microsoft login name is. If you have an Xbox, you have a Microsoft login. After you run through that, it'll automatically install and open up for you. It takes about 20 minutes or so for the installation to progress, so just wait for it to finish, and then you'll be able to open it up. Now, when you first open up a project, you're going to go to File, New Project, And I have a question for you, Padre. Are we still doing console applications?
Well, that's what we learned in the first module.
We
used nothing but the console. We're going to be using something slightly different when we start writing classes and creating objects, but we're going to let Lou show us that. Now,
okay. If
they want to, and I would suggest they do this, if they want to run through the lessons of Module 1 again, it's all console.
Yes.
Use the console and copy and paste exactly the code that you see inside of our GitHub for Module 1, and it will work.
Yes. And then you can just simply run it by, I'll cancel out of that. You can hit start, or you can go up here to debug to make sure that everything is correct. So I'll hit start debugging. It'll go ahead and start for you, and then it'll run your code. I don't have anything right here just yet because I haven't written a code to be put in here. I just opened up a brand new one, so it's not going to do anything.
Right, yeah, this is code. It's just code like. That doesn't do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So it will run. It will compile. Now, Irene in the chat room makes a very good point, which is if you're a college student, a current college student, you can get the professional version for free.
Ooh.
Microsoft gives it to you. You do have to go through the verification like you do with any time you purchase software.
Like when you have a .edu account
right,
or something.
Right, something like that. But if you are a college student, there's no reason why you have to use the Express version. Something else I should mention is the Express install, which you used, is nice because it gets you up and running right away.
Yes.
But you'll notice that if you want to use some of the other languages that are included in the studio, or if you want to start using some of the modules that can be included, it has to download more.
Ah.
You can. There is a selection to download an ISO for Visual Studio 2013 Express. It's about 4.7 gigabytes, so it's big. It's going to take a while to get. But once you have it, you can then put it aside so that if you ever need to reinstall, or if you need to install on multiple computers, or if you want all of the components at once without having to be able to access the internet, that's a pretty decent option.
Now, of course, if you guys are confused about any of this, definitely go back and watch our first module about C#. We did about 8 episodes where they were all console applications in Virtual Studio, and I think that'll get you up and running in no time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, speaking of up and running, I'm thinking on know-how with Brian Burnett, with Cranky Hippo, we always talk about filling the knowledge hole. Because there's that hunger people have for more knowledge, to know things. And Shannon, I'm just wishing that we had something like that here on Coding 101.
I know a place. I know a really good place that you can go. You can learn software, you can learn how to do really good photography, and you can learn how to code, too.
That's definitely going to fill my requirements for a knowledge hole. Tell
me
about it.
It's a website called lynda.com.
Boom.
So if you're not familiar with it, lynda.com is the place to go to learn everything you want and keep you up to date on all the new software tutorials, all the new coding basics, and pretty much anything else you need to know that you want to learn as far as, computers go. You can learn how to make your own website, pretty much anything. So they help you learn and keep up to date with your software. You can pick up brand new skills, and you can explore new hobbies with their easy-to-follow video tutorials. Whether you want to master the fundamentals of programming or learn a new programming language like Python, which we showed here on Coding 101, or you want to design and develop engaging websites, lynda.com offers thousands of courses in a variety of topics. They recently released a new iPhone and an iPad app for iOS 7, and they enhanced their Android app to provide Chromecast support. That's pretty cool. An iOS app includes a more visual, intuitive interface, and both new apps offer offline courses and video viewing as well. So they make it really easy and really convenient to learn, even in environments without internet access. So if you're commuting, for example, and you have a dropout on your phone service, you can still watch offline. Lynda.com users can also move seamlessly between mobile and desktop applications. So if you're moving from your computer at home to your mobile phone, you can still watch while you're on the go. They also have a lot of new courses available online, such as Android Essential Training, creating mobile games with Unity, WordPress developer tips like enqueuing styles and scripts, and designing the web, pie charts with CSS. Ooh, that one just sounds really fun. So, for example, what Brian's showing online, Android Studio First Look, Android Essential Training. That would be perfect if you want to create your own apps. You want to learn a little bit about the background of using Android and how to actually improve your experience with that kind of software and smartphones. Perfect. Absolutely wonderful if you want to design and develop your own applications. Now, there are over 2,700 courses with more added every single week. And all lynda.com courses are produced at the highest quality. So they're not just, you know, homemade videos that you find on YouTube, for example, with terrible audio. These people that do these are accomplished professionals at the top of their field. They're passionate about teaching. And they have courses for all experience levels, from beginner to intermediate, and those really, really advanced ones for you awesome guys out there who already know a ton of this stuff. Now, lynda.com works with software companies to provide you updated training the same day that new versions hit the market, so you'll always have the very latest skills. And you can watch from your computer, your tablet, or your mobile device, whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours. So each and every course is structured so that you can learn from start to finish. You can also search the transcripts to find quick answers. Just in case you're watching and not quite paying attention enough, you can just search right down there in the transcript. Super, super easy. And lynda.com also offers certificates of completion when you finish a course, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile, which is great if you're a professional in the field. And it's only $25 a month for access to the entire lynda.com course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan. And this includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's project, using the exact same project assets that they do. And that is so important. And you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/C101 to access the entire library. That's over 2,700 courses. Do it now. It's free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/C101. And of course, we thank Lynda so, so much for their sponsorship of Coding 101. We love them.
And we're big fans of Lynda because, as we've said several times on this show, we understand that what we're giving the audience is just a teaser. It's a taste on the various languages that we like to program in. You could use something like Lynda to actually fill in the gaps. Again,
yes.
Fill in that knowledge hole and actually move forward from what you see here on the show.
There's tons that we can't cover in the 30 minutes that we're here per week. So go to lynda.com and fill in all those little gaps with all the extra goodies for every single programming language. It's totally worth it.
I'm all about goodies. Thank you. Brian just brought the knowledge hole up on the screen. Now, I thought we should probably get into the Ivory Tower.
Oh, yay!
Let's talk about it. Now,
I've missed the Ivory Tower.
Right? Yeah. There's something. I love the wild card weeks, but when we come back, it's like, oh, yeah, Ivory Tower again.
Oh,
I get to talk about stuff. When we talk about C#, of course, we're talking about an object-oriented programming language.
Right.
Now, we talked about this again in the first module, but I think it's due for a refresher. Before object-oriented programming, the way that you would code is you would code the process, and then you would consider the data. Right? So I code something. They're separate, right. We consider them separately. Here's my code and there's the data, and I run the data through my code and I get something.
Right.
Very easy to do, very, very easy to see, but as the programs get bigger and bigger and bigger, it's very difficult to maintain. And it's not the best modeling of the world.
Mm.
You could go back to, again, the first module of Coding 101, and you can see how object-oriented programming helps you not to think of code, but to think of problem solving.
Yeah.
That's what object-oriented programming really is. It's I have a problem. What do I need to solve that problem? Here are the pieces of data I need to solve the problem, and here are the functions, the methods, and the code I need to solve that problem. Now, that whole problem-solving process is an object.
And this is why we got the object-oriented programming.
Object-oriented programming. Now, again, before object-oriented programming, you would just code and then hopefully your data would flow through it.
Right.
But with OOP, it means that you get reusable code. Now, you have the ability to create, like, blueprints of classes and methods and use them over and over again. So I don't have to rewrite something that I'm going to use multiple times inside of my code.
It'll just pull it in as soon as it needs it?
It's going to pull it in when it needs it. It'll get rid of it when it's done. That's
cool.
That's one of the nice things about object-oriented programming, which it handles all that sort of garbage management in the background. The other thing that's really cool about object-oriented programming is that it's easier to understand.
Ah.
Because our brains, think about how our brains work. If you sat down and you looked at 30,000 lines of code from start to finish,
I would fall asleep.
You would fall asleep. But it would be ridiculously difficult figure out what it does.
Yes.
Right? Object-oriented programming breaks that 30,000 lines down into manageable chunks. So rather than saying, this is program, I say, this is my menu, this is my user input procedure, this is my game procedure, or whatever it's going to be, all the way to the end. So you break it up into little chunks that the human brain can actually understand. So it's easier to maintain, it's easier to understand, and of course, it's easier to upgrade. If I can understand, yeah. If you've ever been a programmer who had to deal with someone else's code, you're gonna really like that.
We all know what that is like. Yeah. Make sure you guys comment.
Yeah. Now let's talk a little bit about classes and objects, because we didn't really get there in module one. We talked a little bit about methods and functions, which, by the way, we use those interchangeably. Mm-hmm. Now, when we talked about functions, this was a typical function. Go ahead and go to my computer, Brian. This is just a know-nothing function, right? We've got a public function, right? That's going to give me an integer return. The function is going to be called answer, and it's going to accept two integer variables.
And they'll be named int a
and b. Right. And then the code inside the function is going to run based on the variables that it's received. Mm-hmm. Integer C, so it's creating an integer C, is equal to the value of integer A plus integer B, which would be, let's say, if I gave it 1 and 2, it gives me 3.
Right.
Return C means that the function itself, the method itself, is going to return the value of 3.
Okay.
This is super basic function, right?
Very simple.
Again, this is just brush up. If you watch module one, you should understand this. Go ahead and come back. Now, when we start dealing with those functions, that's sort of like the rudimentary entryway into classes, because classes really aren't that much different.
So what is a class?
Well, a class is, go back to my screen. This is what declaring a class looks like. So public, so again, it looks like the declaration for that function slash method. It's going to be a public class, and it's going to be called C101. And just like the function slash method, everything that goes between the two brackets is going to be part of the class.
Ah.
So in this instance, it doesn't really look a whole lot different from a function, right?
Right, yeah. It's the same layout.
It's the same layout, and it's actually the same idea. But there's one big, big difference here. So when I'm talking about a class, go ahead and come back. When I talk about a class, I'm actually talking not about creating a construct within the computer's memory. I'm talking about creating a blueprint. A class by itself doesn't actually exist.
What?
Yeah, okay, so wrap your mind around this. What I'm doing when I'm declaring a class, so let's say I've written my class, and it's got a bunch of variables, it's got a bunch of methods, it's got a bunch of procedures that I need it to follow, right?
Right.
That's just a blueprint. That I can't actually do.
It's not going to do anything
unless it
has some kind of input.
Well, even with it can't even have input because it doesn't actually exist.
That's weird.
You got to wrap your mind about this, because this is the difference between a class and an object. People think classes and objects are interchangeable. They're not. A class is the blueprint for an object.
That's very strange.
Okay, so think about it this way. I'm building a building, right?
Right.
I have the blueprints for that building.
Yeah.
Okay? If I have the blueprints for the building, do I have a building?
No.
Because I haven't built it yet, right?
You just have an idea.
I have the idea for what the building's going to look like. The same thing goes for a class. When I'm writing a class, I'm just writing the blueprint. It's not until I create an object that class comes into existence.
Okay.
Think of it that way,
right? That makes sense, yeah.
And I'm going to drill this over and over and over again, because this is one of the mistakes that people make all the time when they're dealing with object-oriented programming.
Well, it kind of makes sense, because it's a little confusing.
It is,
right? When you look at the code, it's like, okay, looks the same as, a method.
Yep.
So what's the difference?
So what's the big difference? Well, yeah, and it's because we want to create a blueprint that we can make multiple instances of. We can create multiple objects.
Yeah.
Now, think of it this way. If I create an object, I'm creating it from a class. Mm-hmm. But if I have a class, it's not necessarily an object.
Okay. Yeah, that
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Now, let's actually talk about what goes in a class. What goes inside of a class is pretty much anything. I can put anything in there. I can put variables, I can put methods, I can put procedures, I can put fields. But again, what we're trying to do with object-oriented programming is we're trying to make it solve a problem. So this, it's going to model something in the real world that I want to take care of. And it's going to combine both my code and the data that's necessary to solve that problem.
Ooh.
Okay?
Okay.
And once I have the blueprint for that problem-solving process, I can make as many objects or as many instances of that class as I need.
That makes sense.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I got it so far.
And again, really, it's not that different
right.
from making a function, making a method. It's the same idea. It's just on a grander scale.
Ooh. Okay. This sounds fun.
Yes, yes. Now, so we've already showed you how to define a class. Let me show you how you actually create an object. So this is going to look a little weird. This is the keyword right here, new. C# recognizes new as a way to create an object. And in this particular instance, this is what's happening. I'm doing C101. So it knows I'm going to be using the class I just created called C101. And an object 1 gives me a way to reference that new object.
Okay,
and this is the killer. It doesn't actually create the new object until I write this part.
Oh.
If I wanted to, I could just do this part. C101 object 1, and it will know that object 1 is a reference to a object based on the blueprint of C101, but there would actually be no object named object 1.
Okay. Because you haven't created it.
This is where I create it. Use the keyword new, and then I say C101, and then open and close parentheses. That will go ahead and create a new instance of that object. Now, if I wanted to, I could do this multiple times. I could go C101 object 2 equals new C101, open close parentheses, close.
So then it would know that you're creating a second one called with object 2.
Now it's object 2, and I could do object 3. It doesn't have to be object. I can name it anything I want. I'm just trying to keep this neat. But this is where the power comes into play, because depending on what I've got in that blueprint, I could have just created a brand new object that does incredible
things.
All sorts of things. But I can make as many instances of it as necessary.
Okay.
Right?
And then it'll just go back and call that same code or whatever that
object is. It will create a brand new one. So the memory, it actually creates a brand new one in memory. Like the blueprint in the building, the building now exists. So when I do that process, when I say new and then C101, it's creating
a building.
Yeah, so it takes the blueprints and goes, oh, okay.
So it's like The Sims.
It's very much like The Sims. The whole idea is, this is what I'm going to create. I'm going to create a copy. Boom. But just remember, the blueprint doesn't actually exist.
So
I cannot access anything in the blueprint unless I've actually created an object from the blueprint.
Okay. Very strange, but I get it.
You get it, and you know what? It's going to get easier, because as we start to talk about objects, you're going to see why we want them. You're going to see why it's really good to create them rather than just making a jumble of code.
It's so weird.
It is kind of weird. Now, this is the time where we're going to bring in a code warrior.
Yay!
Who's actually going to show us how this all works. But before we do that, I thought maybe we should take some time to talk about the second sponsor of this episode of Coding 101. What do you think?
I think I'm ready.
Okay, I think I'm ready too, because
I like sponsors.
It's Hover. And what Hover's all about...
Hover's awesome.
Hover is about taking away all the burden of registering your domain name. If you've ever had... Okay, what did they say?
I get huge headaches when I have to register domains.
Always, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Why? It's because you can never get the name that you want. You can never get the version, the TLD that you want, .com, .org, .net. In fact, space on the internet is much like space in the real world, where it's all about location, 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 right? I mean, you could have the greatest idea ever, but if you've got snubs.shannonmorse.com 12356.net, no one's going to find it.
That's why nobody's going to my website.
That's why no one's going to your website. Well, Hover takes that burden away from you, and they make it easy for you to get the domain, the great domain that you want. Now, when you have that great idea and you want to secure a domain name for it, I suggest you check out Hover. They give you what you need to get the job done. You'll find the perfect domain for your idea so that you can get started working on it rather than worrying about that internet real estate. Now, right now, Hover is having a sale on all new domains extensions through September 1st. This sale is for new and existing customers. Summer is the perfect time to start a new project, and every single new domain is deeply discounted, so you can choose whatever you'd like, .club, .ninja, .guru, .just about anything. Now, people love Hover. Geeks, developers, designers, and programmers love Hover because they know that they have the best tools and support. But you don't have to be an expert to get a domain, because the service is really that simple. They take all the hassle and friction out of registering a domain. It gives you easy-to-use, powerful tools to manage your domain so that you can do it right. You can get the perfect domain name and start building your web presence right away. All you have to do is search a few keywords, and they'll show you the best available options and suggestions. It's a fantastic process to see, because sometimes you have your heart set on a domain that you can't get, and you're disgruntled. You start going through Hover, and they'll go, oh, well, no, that one's better. I like that. Let's do that. Now, they also offer you a valet transfer service to make the transfer process painless. So if you're stuck on a registrar that you hate, then Hover will actually take that away from you. Rather than having to deal with callbacks and the pain and the hassle, they'll use their valet transfer service to take care of the whole process and let you know when your domains are settled in their new Hover account. And they'll transfer all your DNS settings, so you don't have to worry. Even if you have a lot of domain names, it's just no additional cost, it's no additional muss, it's no additional fuss. Now, my big thing is that they're honest. They don't believe in heavy-handed upselling. They don't promise you a super low price and then sock you with fees. You get what you paid for, what you agreed on. They include everything you need so that you can get exactly what you need to get at the time you need to get it. They also include custom email, so you get a smart control panel, so you can do what you want with your domain, and they include Whois privacy for free on every domain that supports it. If you ever need it, they have the best customer service support around. It's known for its no-wait, no-hold, no-transfer phone service. When you call, a real person is ready to help. And now they offer you volume discounts. They'll give you a discount on your domain renewals, starting at just 10 domains and then going up in value from there. The idea is the more domains you have in your account, the less you'll have to pay to renew them. So here's what we want you to do. Visit Hover today to register your domain name and for 10% off your first purchase. Take advantage of their summer sale now. Go to hover.com and use our promo code C1018. We thank Hover for their support of Coding 101. Boom.
I'm ready.
Ready?
I'm ready.
Now, we welcome back to the show someone who, he's got a special place in our heart because he was our first code warrior, and it's so nice to have him back teaching C# as he should. Ladies and gentlemen, can we have a drum roll? Like, Mr. Lou Maresca. Lou, thank you for coming back to Coding 101. Oh, and we have no audio.
Of course, I had to mute myself.
There right? we go. Lou, let's do it again. Drum roll. Lou Maresca, thank you for coming back to Coding 101.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
Lou, we've missed you. We've got some really good guests here on Coding 101, but you were our first, and you do have that special place in our hearts.
Just like I do in my mom's heart, because I was the first child.
Aww.
Love being here. I'm actually excited. We get to do some more advanced stuff here, so that's great.
Yeah, you were kind of chomping at the bit the last time because you really wanted to get to some of the more advanced stuff, but we had to cut it because it's like, no, we're out of the realm of 101. So now we get to leak over into 102, and of course, 102 had to start with classes. It was the thing that we didn't cover last time, the thing that I think I most regret because they're important.
I'm so scared. Take it easy on me.
So, Lou.
We'll go slow.
Can you run us through the entire process of creating a class? Because
sure.
It sounds daunting. We've given them the theory, but now they need to know how they actually do it.
You bet. So one thing we should note, too, maybe we take a quick step back, is like basically what a class is in C# is a type. And we talked about types a long time ago in the first couple episodes, is basically just a variable or a placeholder to store value. So it's just, you know, that, and that's how C# kind of handles things. It handles it with different types. And there's what we call classes, there's what we call structures, and we'll talk about that later, obviously, and there's other things too, other different types. Like structures are like value types and classes are reference types. But we'll talk about all that later as well. But classes are just a specific type inside of C#. And it allows you to kind of do stuff and store stuff and change things and do things and that kind of thing, just like you showed so far. So let me show you my screen here, and I'll show you how easy it is to create a class in C#. And just go quick project, just like you showed before. We'll just use a console application, call it something, and create her up. And so we have this program. So what I would do real quick is normally they create a class already, which is what we use for our program. It's just this what our base class called program. And inside it has a main function that actually allows you to kind of put stuff in here. We did this before. We said console, write line. We did a whole bunch of stuff inside here.
Right.
And this is just, again, what the class will run right out of the box. It'll basically just only run this main function off this class. But if we wanted to add our own class, let's say we wanted to add a class called. So we basically what we do is you go over here and you say, I want to add a new class. So add, and you can do a new item, or you can go down here and actually just choose class. I'm going to do new items so you can see what else you can do here.
Are these built in?
Yep. This is all built in stuff that you can add. There's obviously lots and lots of extra stuff that we haven't talked about yet, but we're just going to stick with the class for now. It's the top one here. It's actually now this is all the stuff that are under all these other separate things over here, all these other separate categories. I'm just going to choose code, so it kind of narrows it down to just a couple things. And you'll see there's a class item there. And down here, it'll already give you kind of a class name for it. And I'm just going to create a class called Animal. So this we can kind of understand how classes work. I'm going to hit add. And then now you notice over here, the class is added to my little project file that we have here. My project has just got a bunch of stuff in there. It's got my program class and now my animal class. And pretty easy. And again, it adds some additional stuff on the top up here. We can kind of ignore this for now. But what we really want to pay attention to is the fact that it's class. And so one thing we should note too is classes, they have this ability to have what they call, whether they're private or public. And what I'm going to make this one public for now. So this way I can kind of see it all over my program and be able to use it no matter where I'm at. And so just as easy as that. So if I go back and just as Padre showed, he said, if you want to create an object or a version of that, I can do that. So I can do animal equals new animal. And boom, now I got an object that is of the type class of that type animal. And it's a class. It's an object version of that class.
Right. And you can make as many copies of that class as you need, as many objects based on that class, just by going animal, animal one equals new animal, animal, animal two equals new animal, as many as you need to finish your program.
Exactly right. And so, I mean, one of the things that with classes are they're pretty unique. They allow you to do things like, you know, like if I wanted to create a type of animal, I could do like duck, and I could say, you know, it's also an animal. And so we'll get into what this is later, but this is called inheritance. This is basically saying, you know, I have this thing. It's a base thing of all things. It's a base of all things. It's called an animal. And now I have a duck, which is actually a type of animal. So I'm going to use that. So now if I go up here, I could do duck.
All right.
And again, a duck, if I look inside of it, actually, I'll try something else really quick. I'm just going to add we'll talk about this too, but this is called a property. So if I put number of legs, type as fast as I can. And then if I pop over here, if I actually look at duck, now it's got number of legs in it.
Right.
I didn't put it in duck. I actually put it in animal.
But because duck is a part of the class animal.
Yeah,
that's right.
So Lou, again, I think this bears repeating. What you've done is you've used inheritance to essentially make a new class based on the original animal class, and you've added properties, fields inside of that class. Which do you remember in coding in the first module? How you could start typing something and it would tell you what your options are, right?
Yes, I remember that very
well. Well, if you're using this class, it will give you the options for all the methods and variables that you've put inside of that class.
That's really cool. And it makes sense that it would be included in anything that's also a part of that class.
Correct. If you've got
like horse and pig, and you would still see number of legs in each one of those because they'd still be a part of animal.
Right. And what Lou was showing us is super, super powerful, because what it allows us to do is to say, okay, this class right here, this blueprint, is going to be the basis for everything I'm going to do, but I'm going to have to modify it slightly to make it work for my purpose.
It's kind of like having a whole bunch of remodeled homes, and each one's going to be a little
slightly different, but the important thing is you don't have to do all the work again for every single home, for every single instance. It's just like, no.
Cool.
This is that class. It just has this one little change.
I like that.
Yeah, yep. Very powerful. Okay,
so
Lou.
One thing,
keep going.
Yeah. So one thing to note too is what I wanted to talk about too is the reason why I use duck as an example is it's actually important because C# is called what they call a static or a strongly typed language, and what that means is that when you have a variable and you give it a type, or it basically telling the program when it actually compiles and does all its magic under the hood, it's telling it to go and check it to make sure that I can only store specific things in that variable. So like, for instance, if you show my screen again real quick, if I try to like say that the duck has a number of legs, normally I'm going to put a number in there. So if I put a number, it's like, oh yeah, that's right. You put a number in there, it's not going to give me an error. But if I try to stick in there like a text like this,
Oh.
It's going to say, if I try to build this, it's going to say, no, no, no. You can't convert a string or a bunch of characters to a number. It's not going to work out. And the reason is because that's what they call a statically checkable, strongly typed language like C sharp, because it's going to check for those things. So it's kind of like some security around when you're coding. And there are other languages that what they call dynamically typed or duck typing, they like to call it, because the whole reason why they call that is if it, you know, it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And that's because at runtime, it figures out whether it's what type it actually is. So and that's why I wanted to make this example here, because I'm explicitly telling the compiler or C sharp that this is a duck and the duck has some legs and the legs are a number. And so and now it can all check all that stuff once it compiles.
You know, Lou, this is it's kind of refreshing, because the last two modules that we've done have all been very IDE light. They haven't really had an integrated developer environment, whereas C sharp has a very strong IDE. Whereas, like in Python or Perl, if we made a mistake, we would just see.
We wouldn't know where the mistake was.
We wouldn't know where the mistake is.
Just have to fix it.
If you're looking at the IDE for Visual Studio, it will actually tell you when you've got mistakes. It will tell you if, oh no, that's recursive, I can't do that. Or it will tell you, you're calling on a property that I don't have. So I don't know what you want me to do.
Yeah, it makes sense. I wish everyone would do that.
Yeah.
Although I guess they could if you put them in the correct type of GUIs.
Yeah, but remember, the reason why we're also doing Visual Studio is because Visual Studio, once we get the hang of this, and I'm hoping we have time to get there with Lou, we could use this to, say, create a mobile app.
Ooh.
Because the GUI is going to let you, once you start using like classes that are written for mobile devices, mm-hmm. it will let you figure out what things you can play with, what devices you can access.
You mean I can make my own video game on my Android about cats?
Sure.
How many cats? Yeah. How many legs does a cat have?
You've got to see someone about this cat problem. You really do. All right, Lou, I'm gonna be the people here, and I'm going to say, wait a minute, Lou. When I wrote a function, I got the same thing. When I wrote a method in C sharp in module one, it would also tell me. I could call the function that will give me the little hints on what properties I can add to this. What does a class do that a method doesn't?
So a class is just kind of that encapsulates everything, right? So it's something that describes a thing that does things. And so the members inside of it are things that describe it. Like, for instance, the properties are going to give it some properties, right? Some descriptions of that thing. Then it has methods or functions, and those methods and functions actually let it do stuff. So, like, for instance, if I wanted my animal to, let's say I want my animal to move, right? So I give it a function, or this is a method in C sharp. We call it methods. And
by the way, let me clarify this, because we had this problem in module one. Functions or methods, I don't care what you call it, they do the same thing. In C sharp, we call it a method, but we've also called it a function, because in all of programming, we know them as functions.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So one thing to note here is, like, let's say I'm going to add a variable in here, and this is the key here. This is the parameter to that function. It's basically saying, you know, I'm going to move, but I'm going to have a specific speed. But in the duck's case, I'm actually going to do, I want to move too, but I instead.
Override. I love it.
Yep. And I'm going to override it. But instead, I'm going to say, you know what? He actually flies. I'm going to say
There we go.
So normally the move would do something else. Let's say maybe this would say up here, he runs. Normal animals might run, but in this case, this animal, he's going to fly. I'm going to make sure I put this in there too. So the thing is, now if I run over here and I say, I want my duck to move.
Oh.
And I say, he moves really fast. Let's say, 100. Right? Now, if I were to run this really quick, I'll put a little breakpoint there. Oh, we have a little error. What's with it? What's the error?
This is what happens if you do it in real time.
That's right, yeah. The saying that it's telling me, actually, this is what the compiler is going to say, is it's actually not marked. You can't actually override this thing because it's not marked correctly.
Right.
I'm going to Yeah, so we'll talk about what that means later, but I'll mark it so
you know. I don't want to freak them out with too much.
Don't want to freak them out too much. So one thing, now it says flies, right? So if I were to basically just create an animal, though, and say, animal, move, speed, let's put them, they also go 100, and run this. It's kind of small, so I apologize, but you know, the animal runs, and the duck flies.
Right.
So that's kind of the key, is you can create a base. You can create a base class that does a bunch of things, but then you can, again, like Padre said, you could copy that functionality. But then you can also change it. So you can say, you know what, I don't want to do what that base one does. I want to actually override that and actually make it move a different way. So I'm going to make it fly.
That's cool.
Yeah. Of course, we're using really super simple examples here. We could see the entire class, and mm-hmm. we can see the entire inherited class on less than a page of code.
Right.
But once this starts getting complicated, I mean, once you write a class to access the screen on a mobile device, mm-hmm. it's going to be big. It's going to be really, really big. And you may want to say, hey, guess what? That was the default class to access a screen. I need to create an inherited class because I need to access it on a specific Android device. And we all know Android's a little bit different. So this is for this device. And this
you
one's
can make
for
it
this,
a little more specific.
A little more specific. I override the specific parameters that need to change for that device. The nice thing about that, again, is I don't have to rewrite the entire thing. I just say, 99% of the code is going to be the same. It's that one little thing. And rather than writing
you don't
an
change
entirely
it in
new
class.
Yeah, I just inherit it.
That's cool. Yeah. I totally get it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That totally makes sense. Now, Lou, we do need to stop because we're running out of time here.
Sure.
What are we going to do next time?
So I think we're going to go a little deeper into different types, and we're going to talk things about what we call interfaces, and that's another version of a type in C#. And then maybe we'll go a little bit into some of the functionality of Visual Studio and how to add features to your program too. So I think we'll get a little bit more into that so you guys can kind of understand Visual Studio as an IDE, like what you were talking about, and then give you a little bit more feature set.
Yeah, that's actually really, really important.
Yes.
Now, we're not going to have regular homework for you, because what we want you to do is we want you to go ahead and download the IDE for your device, like Shannon showed you at the beginning. Now, she showed you Windows 8, but if you go back into Module 1, she also showed you how to use, what was it for Mac? It was Mono.
That's right.
I'm sure the chat room will. Yeah, Mono Develop. I think it was something along the lines of that. But there is an IDE for Mac users as well. So find the one that you need for your device. And next week, we're actually going to give you homework.
Yep. Oh, I'll do homework this week, though.
Oh, yeah. Lou, thank you so very much for being our code warrior. Thank you for actually showing us how classes come into play. It is such an important topic. So I don't mind burning an entire episode just to get into people's heads what it is, why it's important, and how you use it.
It was worth the 30 minutes or 45.
Lou Maresca, the senior developer at Microsoft, we thank you. Can you tell the folks at home where they can find you in case they want to see what you do in between your appearances on the Twit TV network?
You bet. It's Lou MM on Twitter, and you can check me out at crm.dynamics.com. That's all the work I've been working on for the last several years.
And we love you, and it's so good to have you back. We'll see you next week. And also, we'll see you next week. That's right. Next week,
yes,
we're hoping that you're going to have your computers fully equipped so that you can get the lessons. We know it's always a little jarring anytime we start up a brand new programming language, especially
when...
It's exciting, right?
Don't be scared.
Don't
get some boat roll.
Don't be scared.
Get ready. We're going to do some C#.
Yeah. No, but seriously, this is a heavy programming language because it's not like Perl or like PHP. Python, where you could just write it in Notepad. You do need to use an IDE. It's going to take a little getting used to. So please spend the next week sitting down and playing.
Yeah.
Find our examples from Module 1. Play with functions, play with methods, play with variables, output things to the screen, get things back in from the user, because you need to have all of that as a basis before we continue in this 102 module.
I'm ready.
All right. Now, maybe. In case they get freaked out, they can find... our TD is just a strange...
What, you don't like that? Keep calm. Don't be scared.
If they want to find our show notes, Shannon, where do they go?
You can go over to twit.tv/code or twit.tv/coding101. All of those go to the same place. That's where you can find every single episode that we've done. You can go back to the original C-sharp module for Coding 101. So you can basically walk yourself through and get caught up with everything that we're going to be talking about on this module. That's also where you'll find the link to our GitHub. We have all the original code from the first module in our GitHub. So you can go there, find module one, and download and copy and paste all those different codes that we did for C-sharp, and you can run them on your own machine and play with them to get an idea of what each and every one mean.
Right, and you don't actually have to download the episodes unless you want to. You could just look at the GitHub, because if you can copy and paste the code from the GitHub into the console, it will run.
Yes.
And once it starts running, what do we like to say? Break it!
Break it.
Mess with
it.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do to destroy the computer by running code unless you get really, really
creative.
Make it
get errors and then try to figure out why those errors exist.
That's how it works. And if you get stuck, the best place to get help is our Google Plus page. Where
love this place.
We don't have a shortener anymore. That kind of broke.
I made a bit.ly.
Yeah.
I made a bit.ly.
Oh, what is it?
bit.ly/twitcoding101.
Go there. bit.ly/twitcoding101. We've got over 1,000 users in there, and they're users of every expertise. You've got beginners, you've got intermediate, you've got experts. So go ahead and ask your questions. Or if you are an expert already, help those people who have questions. Remember, it's up to you to make sure that we get the next generation of code monkeys.
And where else can we be found?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that little thing called Twitter?
Twitter?
Yeah.
I'm twitter.com/snubs, @snubs.
And I'm twitter.com/PadreSJ. You're going to find me @, because it's like a big fat symbol.
And you can always throw questions at us over there. We are always on Twitters.
We're always on Twitters. And you get to find out what we do in between episodes of Coding 101, which, by the way, we do live every Thursday at 11 o'clock. No, at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. I'm stuck on my other show.
I wasn't aware it was so early.
Yeah, I know. I never wake up this early. At live.twit.tv. Go ahead and jump in. And as long as you're there, we've got a chat room, right?
We do, yes. It's irc.twit.tv. And we have tons and tons of people in there asking questions. So we try to throw them out during the live show so you can get your answers right away.
Man. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
I'm Shannon Morse.
End of line.